Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Good morning. Greetings to all, and thank you for joining me today. It's a beautiful day. I don't know about where you are, but I'm in the desert southwest, and it's 100 degrees. I think it will reach 105 by mid-afternoon. So summer is definitely here. I hope wherever you are, it is just beautiful and sunny and joyous. And I want to thank all my listeners in California, Colorado, Georgia, Philadelphia, all across the United States, and Japan, England, Ireland, Africa, all of you that have enjoyed my program, I do want to thank you for listening and invite you to share. Today I'm going to be talking about what shamanism is. And if you have any questions or opinions or just want to join the conversation, you are welcome to call in. The number is 1-323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. And I look forward to anyone that wants to join the conversation with me, because we're actually going to be talking about what shamanism is and is not. Now, I know I've covered a little bit of that in previous shows, but not to the depths that I'm going today. Okay. So a lot of people are looking around at this strange phenomena. Why is shamanism becoming so popular now? Some people think it's weird that this ancient belief system is popping up again when we've become so technologically advanced. This seems like old stuff from way back when. How could it possibly be pertinent today? And there are some people that say it's pagan and it's sinful. New Agers have embraced it, but have misunderstood its roots. They equate it with Native American religion, but it's not a Native American practice per se. And meanwhile, Native Americans are angry that the white man may be trying to steal their sacred heritage. So you can see that there are a lot of misunderstandings about what exactly shamanism represents. So I'm going to attempt to clear all this up, all the misunderstanding, misrepresentation, and misperception about shamanism. The word shaman actually comes from Siberia. It's a tribal word used to describe their healers. And it's actually pronounced shaman, S-H-A-H-M-A-N. I hear people out there calling it shaman and all sorts of different pronunciations, but it's actually called shaman, okay? And the shamanic healer, say in Mongolia and Siberia and those areas, is a type of medicine man or woman whose method of healing is characterized by entering a state of altered consciousness and traveling to other worlds in search of help for their patient or their community, and in search of communion and assistance from compassionate helping spirits. Now, shamanism itself is a belief system that is over 40,000 years old. It's not a religion. This belief system has prevailed worldwide regardless of
peoples being separated by mountain ranges, oceans, deserts, distance, politics, and man-made boundaries. And the beliefs are as follows. First, we believe that everything is alive. Second, we believe that every living thing has a spirit or consciousness. Third, all living things are connected. Fourth, this connection has been called many things by different cultures, life force energy, chi, the great spirit that moves in all things, the ku, and many, many other names. But the general consensus among all people is that we are each part of some force or power much larger than ourselves. We're like cells in the body of a great organism we call life. Fifth, we are all one. Sixth, because we are interconnected, we have the responsibility to honor and protect all living things. All living things have a right to be here, and their rights are equally important. Also, because we are interconnected, we are to cooperate and help each other. If we are going to do something that impacts the lives of other life forms, we need to ask their permission, and we need to thank them if they agree. This is what living in good relation and harmony is all about. We know from Australia's Aborigines that there was a time when all living things could talk to each other, but that connection was broken long, long ago, and most humans forgot how to communicate with other species, and so they began treating them like inanimate objects to be used with no consideration for their rights or their wishes. Shamanism believes we can still communicate with plants and animals on the spirit level, and that we can still draw on the wisdom of the ancestral spirits, as well as more highly evolved spirits in more highly evolved worlds. Shamanism believes that this plane of existence in which we live is middle world. It's as if you were looking at the great tree of life that has been talked about in every religion on the planet. And midway down the tree is middle world where we live. And above us, there are several levels of other worlds. And below us, below middle world, there are several levels of worlds that go down. It's the general consensus that the first world below our middle world is the domain of the power animals. It is very much like this world, only without people. And there are buildings, cars, noise, and pollution. It's very beautiful and very peaceful. The worlds below that world are strange and get progressively darker as they descend, which probably gave rise to the theory that hell is down below. We don't go down to those worlds unless we absolutely have to in order to retrieve someone's lost soul part. The levels above the middle world are beautiful and some are positively ethereal, which probably led to the theory that heaven is above us. Advanced teachers and healers reside in these upper worlds, and we can request their help, for they are compassionate beings who see how much we suffer in this world and are willing to help us if we ask. Religions sprang out of these beliefs. When humans began to personify the various elements that played such powerful roles in their survival, for instance, the sun, the thunder and lightning, the rain, the fertility of the land, the spirit of the harvest, and so on and on. This led to, eventually, the deification of a whole pantheon of gods and goddesses that were honored, prayed to, and celebrated in various festivals throughout the year. Then human prophets emerged, preaching of one great God who ruled over all And over thousands of years, these prophets expressed and emphasized the powers of different aspects of this God, which resulted in many different religions, all claiming that their God is the highest and the only God. Shamanism has been maligned and criticized and charged as heretical and evil by many of these religions, which obviously have forgotten where their roots began. Furthermore, they refuse to acknowledge that there are spirits and claim that it is wrong or sinful to make contact with spirits. This is all very strange to me, considering that Jesus said that God is a spirit. And the Catholic Church deifies certain dead Christians, giving them the title of saint and urging their flock to pray to the spirit of these saints, asking for their help and their guidance. Furthermore, all the major religions of the earth that stem from Abraham, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all profess a belief in angels, which are unseen. In other words, they're invisible, so they must also be spirits. They raise their children to believe that they have guardian angels or spirits watching over them. And they seem to have forgotten that the Bible tells of Lucifer and his angels falling to earth. So obviously there must be good angels and bad angels. Curious how man's mind and human thinking have brought forth such concepts out of the original shamanic belief system that sought harmony and cooperation among all living things. The problem seems to arise from mankind's ego, which wants to believe that humans are superior and therefore more important than any other life form. Shamanism recognizes that every life form is a sacred part of the great spirit of life. So all life is important and precious and part of us. No one life form is more or less important than the other. Or as Native Americans say, Metakio Yasin, all my relations, the four-leggeds, the no-leggeds, the winged ones, the finned ones, all are an integral part of the puzzle that creates the big picture of life on earth. Now, getting back to shamanic practice, the actual ritual of making contact in the spirit world and with spirit helpers is accomplished through something called the shamanic journey, in which the shaman uses drumming or in some cases plant medicine to enter an altered state of consciousness, during which they then travel out of body to wherever they need to go to secure healing and guidance for a person or community that is out of balance and experiencing ill health or trouble in their lives. Excuse me. Some anthropologists and historians have referred to this journey as an ecstatic trance. Iliad's famous book on shamanism is called Archaic Techniques of Ecstasy. I personally don't think he understood what he was witnessing in the tribes he visited in Siberia and Mongolia. It bothers me that he would lead people to believe that a shaman loses consciousness, enters a trance, and experiences some kind of sexual or divine ecstasy. We don't lose consciousness, we are not cataleptic, and we don't usually experience ecstasy. It's not a religious experience. We are in a state of heightened awareness. We leave our body but are still aware of it. And we travel or fly through other worlds to accomplish a purpose. And that purpose may be to find out why things are not working in this person's life or why there is a certain pattern that seems to just keep repeating itself, or if they have suffered soul loss, where we might find that soul part and bring it back. There are all sorts of reasons for why we take the journeys. But as soon as we have accomplished that purpose, we come right back. It's not a place that we go to visit and hang out or sightsee. Okay? Yet the power of what can be accomplished, healed, brought into harmony, and what can be released through freeing a person to move forward and be successful, healthy, and happy is no less than amazing. Miracles are not rare. They are common and expected outcomes. Among the wisdom teachings and wisdom traditions, shamanism is without dispute the premier effective method of bringing body, mind, and soul into balance and restoring hope and health to a person's life. It is dogma-free, doesn't require any specific religious practice. Actually, it supports whatever religious practice you choose. It does have priest, it doesn't have priest or a list of thou shalt nots. It's an acknowledgement of all living things as our family, a part of us, and that we must take into consideration how our actions might affect all our relations. In this way, it's very similar to a lot of the Native American teachings. I love Native American ways and incorporate some of them into what I do, such as calling in the directions, which actually I called in the directions before I did this show today, because I want all the powers of goodness and love and light and good things flowing through me and through my voice as I talk to you today. I want whatever I say and do to be a blessing in the world. So the main difference between what we call shamanism and the practice of Native American medicine men or women is that they do not usually or typically practice the journey, the altered state of consciousness, and the journey into the other worlds. That is really the main thing that we do as shamans. They do often work with ancestor spirits, power animals, herbs, and healing songs. Sound and song is very important in all shamanic traditions. The spirit of a plant or an animal may give you a song to call them with. For instance, I have a song that I sing when I'm getting ready to do extraction work, which means removing an intrusion that may be causing an illness in someone's body. And I was given a song to sing to bring in the power animal that helps me with this. It has the power to actually pull these things out. And so I sing that song and it flies in and merges with me. And we do this remarkable extraction work that is just amazing how effective it is. Okay, now they can also give us a song to for healing. For instance, I was at a workshop one time in Sonoma, California. It rained solid for the 2 weeks I was there, and I caught a cold, which went down into my chest. And one of the other people at the workshop journeyed and got a healing song for me. And it was just, you know, just a few lines and very simple. Sometimes songs don't really make a lot of sense, but it isn't about the words. It's a bit about the tones, the sounds that you're making. And this song was amazing. It actually, when I sang it, it caused my lungs to kind of vibrate. And that vibration loosened up all that congestion in my lungs and cleared it out. So it was amazing. We also sometimes get power songs. And power songs are to build our strength and our resolve. Sometimes if we're feeling not so powerful and not ready to deal with some issue, we can sing that power song, and it fills us with the energy and the power to do what needs to be done. Usually the songs, like I said, are really simple. They may be just 4 to 6 lines, and we would just repeat them over and over like a chant. But the sounds carry great power. They're amazing. It's just amazing how many different things that we can do with shamanism. So many different ways that we benefit from the wisdom of the plants and the animals and the compassionate teachers and healers in the upper worlds. I actually think that everyone should learn how to do a shamanic journey. It's not that hard. It's hard if you want to become a shamanic practitioner and actually work with other people and help relieve their issues. I say it's hard because you do have to learn to get your mind and your ideas and rationalizations and perceptions and everything out of the way. And that's one of the hardest things for a human to do, it seems. We have this intense need to rationalize everything and to figure out why it's doing this or why that doesn't work. Or, you know, we our mind is like a child with a stone, little pebble or stone they've picked up, and they turn it over and over and they look at it and, you know, and examine it 50 million times like it's the most magical thing in the world. Well, our minds are like that. We tend to, you know, want to know more and more and more. So if you learn to journey with the intent of helping other people, then you must learn to still your mind and to stop trying to reason. When you're on the journey, you have to be open to what the spirits are telling you and showing you without your mind jumping in and say, oh, that means such and such. Because sometimes we see or hear something that really doesn't have much meaning to us. In fact, we may gloss over some of the things. We may not even mention some of the things we saw because it didn't seem important to us. It didn't seem to have anything to do with the journey. But we have to get away from that concept too, because everything they show us has a meaning. I was journeying for someone once that, well, Dr. Harner always taught us, always teaches us, I should say, to mention everything that we saw to the person that we're working with, because it may have meaning to them. And so I have tried very hard to stick with that and to get my mind out of the way and to remember, to really focus and remember everything I see and hear so that I can share it with the person I'm working with. And there was a lady that I was sharing with, and I mentioned that for some reason, I didn't know what it meant, but this bright yellow bird kept flitting through every so often. And she said, oh, her husband had loved this yellow bird that had used to sit by his window. He was ill for a long time, and it would sit on the branch of the tree outside his window. And it was very important to him. And to her, that meant that there was a contact somehow with her husband who was now deceased. And it touched her heart to know that the yellow bird had showed up. So we just never know when we're working with someone what we might see out there that has so much meaning to them and made no sense to us, you know? So we have to learn to really clear our minds, to empty our cup. And when we go on the journey, to be open to receive what they are showing us and what they are telling us, and to not get our mind involved with trying to figure out what this one means and what that was about and so forth. So it takes a lot of discipline to learn to do that. However, on the other side, almost anyone can actually learn how to do the journey. And the great thing about that is if you know how to do the journey, you can go over and sit down and actually have a conversation with your teacher in the upper world. I'm not talking about praying and not hearing a response, or meditating and listening and not hearing a response, I'm talking about actually traveling to the place where your teacher is, being able to sit down face to face with them and ask questions and ask about, you know, talk to them about the issues in your life and what to do about them or how would be the best way to handle this or that, and actually have a teacher that's talking to you and explaining things to you and answering your questions. It's awesome. And this is something all people used to know in ancient times, used to know how to access these realms of wisdom and these helping spirits that are so compassionate and are willing to help us if we ask. So there are lots of things which would benefit you by learning to journey and to go and meet with your power animal. And the power animals are wonderful. They're joyful. Lots of times they're very playful with us. And they just exude so much love. One of my power animals, when I go down to meet her, she tosses me up on her back and she dances around and she just, you know, just shows me so much love and affection. And then if I have a problem, she might actually shed tears. And I know how much she cares for me. And so she takes me to find an answer or to get help. And they're just awesome, wonderful beings. And of course, as I've told you before, a power animal is not really an animal. These are really advanced beings who take the form of an animal so that we can relate to them. And otherwise, they're so advanced that we would not be able to recognize them or relate to them in any way, shape, or form if they appeared to us as they really are in their other worlds. I like the fact that they come as an animal because they usually choose an animal that shows what their particular strength is and how they are going to help you. For instance, a horse is all about liberation and freedom. And a bear brings great wisdom. An owl also helps you to hear what's not being said and see the truth through all the illusions around you. Very wonderful traits to have in this very confusing world that we live in. So they're just amazing. An eagle may show up to teach you about fearlessness. Before I got into shamanism, I was a metaphysical minister, and I taught meditation. Gosh, I must have taught meditation and conducted meditation groups for 20 years or so. And it's strange because this, you know, shamans are chosen by the spirits. And shamanism was the one thing I had never explored and never thought about. But toward the end, before I was pulled into shamanism, in my meditations, this eagle began to show up. And I had never seen anything like this show up in my meditations in all those years of sitting in silence and basking in the bliss and everything. I had never had an animal show up like this. And it showed up in my meditation and it took me on its back and flew me out over the Grand Canyon. At that time, I was terrified of heights. So this was kind of, you know, scary to me. And then to top it off, he perched on the branch of a pine tree that leaned out over the canyon. So below us on this frail little branch that we were sitting on was about 2,000 feet of nothingness. And he said that it was for me to learn fearlessness. And I thought, wow, you know, this is very strange. Why is this eagle coming into my meditation? And why is he teaching me about fearlessness? I'm an Aries and I'm usually, pretty strong. But I did need to learn some lessons, it turned out. And shortly after that, the Great Spirit led me into shamanism. It was not something I had planned. Like I said, I had explored every religion, every philosophy under the sun, I thought. But I had not even considered, I hadn't even thought about shamanism. So when I got pulled into it and took my first journey, it was like coming home, and I've never turned back. It's become my life work and my life way of life. But it's interesting how animals or great spirits of wisdom and teaching and everything can come to us and begin to work with us and show us ways of being that far surpass perhaps what we have been up to that point. We all, with our lives, we deal with a lot of issues and we collect and accumulate a lot of garbage from past relationships, childhood hurts, all these different things that traumas that have happened to us in the course of a lifetime. So it's really refreshing to be able to go somewhere beyond this realm of existence, this plane of existence, which is chaos, and into a realm where it is quiet and beautiful, and these wisdom teachers are available to us to talk with us, to share great truths, great wisdom, and to help us to help others. So, yes, it is possible to go over there and have conversations and have your answers to questions that have troubled you for maybe a lifetime. So I would suggest that everybody take at least a basic journey course. The Foundation for Shamanic Studies teaches them. You can go to www.shamanism.org, and they have a list of teachers and practitioners. You can also go to www, excuse me, sandraingerman.org. Com, and she has also practitioners and teachers directories, and she's also a great practitioner herself. Now, on my website, which I hope some of you do look at now and then, it's www.shamanskeep.com. Shamanskeep.com. And I cover a lot of information on there about what we do. I also talk about what we're doing now, the radio show, and who my guests have been and who's coming up in the future. And also, I am a practitioner myself. You can reach me at Caroline@www.shamanskeep.com. If you have questions, if you need help with something, I work on a donation basis. I have devoted my life to helping other people, so feel free to contact me. Now, also on my website, you'll notice that there is a donations button. And I am going to tell you today that if you like this show, if you've learned something from it, if you've been inspired by it, if you've enjoyed the wonderful guests that I've had on, then please help contribute to the show. Please help me keep this show on the air. It is a bit of a struggle for me to keep it going every month. Fortunately, I've had some wonderful people helping donate along the way. So I would ask that if you have enjoyed any part of this show and would like to have it stay on the air, please go to www.shamanskeep.com and click on donation and scroll down. There's a PayPal link there. And any donation is welcome. Frankly, if every one of you donated $1 a month, I could keep this show going for quite a while. And it would be wonderful. We could also do a lot of other things. I have some property out in the desert in northern Arizona where there are a couple of vortexes. The energy is just amazing. And I've been talking about for several years now building a retreat for people, a kind of a wellness retreat for people who want to get away from the city, away from the noise, away from their issues, and actually have some peace and quiet and time to work on some of these things that need a little extra help. You know, I had a gentleman come to me several years ago, and he had a terminal disease, which thank the Great Spirit and all my helpers, we were able to resolve that for him. But his attitude was, just fix me, because I did try to talk to him about some, you know, issues in his life, maybe some things like unforgiveness and anger and things that he had not dealt with. As I talked to him, it became obvious that these were issues that needed to be resolved. And he was like, well, just fix me. Why can't you just fix me? And I'm like, you know, I can. I can just fix you. But if you don't deal with these issues, this is all going to come back on you somewhere down the road. Maybe not this exact illness, but something else. You're going to keep having problems until you resolve these issues of anger and hatred and unforgiveness and retaliation and, you know, negative energies that deplete a person. They just drain your body of energy and add to your troubles rather than helping. So anyway, there's a lot involved with healing. There are a lot of books that have been written about why people don't heal. Because some people, it's true, there are a few people that no matter what we've done, no matter what the doctors have done, no matter all the prayers that have been said, no matter what, they don't heal. And like I said, Carolyn Meese wrote a book about why people don't heal. Sandra Ingerman wrote a book about it. There's lots of people have written about this because it's kind of disappointing to us, to say the least, and a puzzle of why, when you do all the steps and you make all the moves, someone still doesn't heal. So I've discovered over the years of working with people that it usually goes back to that thing. They still have issues that they haven't resolved. We fix them, so to speak. The doctors fix them and send them home. And we sent them home with supposedly they should be healing. But they didn't deal with any of their issues. They went home and settled back into their routine and just kept their old programs in their mind going round and round, and their old resentments and angers still gnawing at them inside. And they didn't release any of this. And so I've come to the conclusion that is really the key to healing. The body is an amazing instrument. It can heal itself from almost anything, given the right set of circumstances, given the fresh air and sunshine and good clean water and good healthy food, and possibly most important, good healthy thoughts. So when we work with people that are in need of healing, and this goes for ourselves as well, we have to examine, we have to soul search and examine what it is in them or in us that has not been released, that is still causing the old tapes to play over and over and over. And you know what I'm talking about. Everybody has that mind chatter that goes on inside them that tells them that, oh, this won't work. Oh, I shouldn't get my hopes up about that. All these things. And then we have memories from the past that are all part of the garbage that we're carrying around, all part of this stuff that has happened to us that hasn't healed somehow or been released. And until we actually deal with some of those issues and actually, you know, do the work of manually making our mind turn away from that view. It's like you can look out the window and you can look down and see all the dirt in the street, or you can look up and see the stars and the beauty of the world, the trees, the birds flying, all the beauty around you. It's a choice of which direction you're looking in. And it's the same with our memories. We can choose to focus on what's behind us, the past, and relive all those painful things that may have happened, or we can choose to shift our focus to the here and now, what's happening to us today, what have we seen today that was beautiful, what have we heard today that was beautiful, what good thing have we got planned for ourselves for today, and the future. Why not plan something wonderful for yourself for the future? You know, the past is history. We have to let go of some of those things. Of course, the problem is we can't let go of them until we can let go of our anger or our pain or hurt from those situations. And this does involve some getting down to brass tacks and being willing to meet your anger in person. I find that stuffed anger is at the root of so many people's problems. And that's partly our society. We're not told how to deal with anger. We're told from the time we're little children, don't you get angry? Don't you make that mad face? No, you don't act like that. That's wrong. And we're taught to just stuff it, to just swallow it and not, you know, not lose our temper. We're taught above all else, do not lose your temper. And so we grow up and we've been programmed to stuff these feelings. And then we get along in life and we've suffered some traumas, heartbreaks, loss of loved ones, divorces, all kinds of things that have really upset our lives. And we dwell on those past things and we're hurting inside and we don't know how to deal with it. The first thing, the main breakthrough to a healing is when you can acknowledge your anger. This probably sounds weird to you because most people don't think of acknowledging anger as being part of a healing program. But you have to get it out from inside you. You have to acknowledge it. And oftentimes you have to acknowledge that you had a right to be angry, that the thing that this person did to you was wrong. And you have to be willing to acknowledge that and honor yourself for recognizing that someone did something wrong to you. It wasn't your fault. Somebody did something that hurt you. Okay. And once we get the anger out, we have to deal with the energy of it, because anger is actually a tremendous force, a power, an energy. And like all energy, like electricity, energy can be used for anything. It's energy. You can build a house with it. You can landscape the yard with it. You can use that energy. But you do have to use it up. That's the only way to get it out, is to find a good project. Not to lose your temper, not to retaliate in some horrible way to that person that may have hurt you, but to take that energy, which is from all this anger that's built up inside you, take that energy and use it for some good purpose. Paint a room in your house, redecorate, go out, wash the car. If you're into jogging, go run in the park, or run for 5 miles. Whatever it takes, get that energy of anger out of you. Once you can deplete that energy, you can let go of a lot of the angst from the traumas that have happened into your life. And then at that point, you may be able to forgive that person. Because in order for you to heal and to be able to move forward with your life, you need to forgive. And of course, a lot of people think that forgiving is to say, oh, that's all right. It's all right. It doesn't matter. Never mind, whatever. It's not that at all. To forgive is to give for, to give back love for anger or hate, to give back compassion for pain, to give back a positive. And that's how we begin to heal our inner world and our mind and our body, is by first letting go of those things, using up the energy that's been boiling inside us and making us ill. And then once that's used up, actually becoming open enough to see that in most cases, the person that caused you some harm was also a wounded soul. People that have been hurt terribly strike out at other people, are quick to imagine the worst, and strike out without thinking. So oftentimes, the person that wounded you was already a wounded person themselves, and that's why they acted in ways they did. So at that point, you can forgive them. And you forgive them so that you can go forward, okay? It's not about them. Even if you never see them again the rest of your life, if you just write it on a little piece of paper and say, I forgive and release you to go to your highest good, and all is clear between us now and forevermore. And then burn it. Take it out back, burn it, and let it go up in smoke. Release it. That's what we're talking about, is being able to release the old hurts and the old traumas that tend to gnaw at us and keep us going round and round in the same rut, same way of thinking and same way of doing that hasn't worked for us in the past. So why would we think it would work for us in the future, you know? So we have to be willing to address our pain and our anger, use up the energy, let it go, forgive, and move on, because it's a beautiful world. You have this joyous gift of life. You are alive. You're surrounded by life. The sun is shining. The flowers are blooming. The birds are singing. Everything is here to add to your life. But we sometimes get so busy with what's wrong in life that we don't see all the beauty around us. Shamanism helps us to see that, because we become very aware that the trees are alive and they're looking at us too. They're watching us as we're watching them. The animals are alive. And even though they don't speak our language, if you have a dog or a pet and you look into their eyes and you see their love and you see how they're playful and joyful when you come home. I mean, all creatures communicate with us in different ways. And we have to acknowledge that everything is alive. And when you're surrounded by all these loving, alive plants and animals and beings, and you respond to that love, what greater thing can be going on in your life? Now, we are running out of time, so I hope you've enjoyed today. Please send me an email and tell me what you thought about it. And if you want to contact me, it's caroline@www.shamanskeep.com. Next week, I have Deep Arrow Woman joining us, and she has a mystery way women's teaching, a Women's Way Mystery School in New York, and she'll be telling us all about that. So it's been joyful for me to join you today. Please join us next week. Until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.